say one comment. We're going to film it for the, I may get glued over the bit where I nearly get dragged out the door last week, last Thursday. So, sorry.
Just
so throughout the last few talks, the role of these hemispheres, and so a hemisphere here would be something that projects on over S2 to an ordinary hemisphere, a section or maybe a convex surface, and its Gauss map is a hemisphere. So why do they play a particular role in the proof? Really, it's for the kind of analysis side of it. So let me try and explain this in a little bit more detail. So if you have some surface and you have a say some disk attached to it, and you assume that this is Lagrangian with the Lagrangian boundary condition, and you look at the area of this disk. So the area of this disk is, we saw by this vertical inequality in the neutral case, it's less than the area, the symplectic area. And then because your symplectic structure is exact, in fact, this is the integral over the boundary of the disk here, so over this boundary, of the one form, D of which is the symplectic structure, the symplectic form. And, of course, you can then interchange this to, say, the interior sigma prime. This is the case we're looking at where we have graphs and they are over the same domain. And this would be over sigma prime of theta, which would be, sorry, of d theta, which is omega, because it's Lagrangian, it's zero. So what that tells you is that if you have a Lagrangian boundary condition and you attach a disk to it, you don't expect this disk to have positive area, because we end up with a negative. So what we have to do is kind of elliptize this Lagrangian section. Now, in our particular case, we have a Lagrangian section where one of the coordinates, it's a graph, say, whatever, some function f. And what we do is we introduce a twist. We introduce a holomorphic twist just by addition of a section. So it's eta is your original minus I c0 xi. It's kind of the lowest non-trivial holomorphic. Yeah, it's just a linear holomorphic translation in the fiber. When you do that, this twists up the boundary condition, and the boundary condition, your symplectic form, which we evaluate on the tangent plane, turns out to be, when you do this, 1 minus xi xi bar over 1 plus xi xi bar with minus c0. And the bigger you make c0, the more it gets twisted up and the more it positivizes the thing you started with. So you can see, though, that the maximum you're going to be able to positivize is a disk, is a unit disk, is a hemisphere. So what you can do is when you add to the... Okay, so if you want to see, this is not Lagrangian, it's twisting, so you're somehow just twisting up the normals of the surface in R3. And in fact, if you do it to the normals to the round sphere, just putting that equal to zero, what you get is the normals to an over-twisted contact structure. So it's a very kind of canonical object that you get in this way. You can write down. However, it fails to be fails to twist. In other words, it becomes Lagrangian when you get out towards the edge. So you have to kind of twist it up a lot to get as big a positive area for your disk to move around in. And by doing it, in fact, what not only do you kind of positivize the boundary condition, but in fact you kind of make it stickier. So the analogy here is that under mean curvature flow, it's like a capillary problem. You have some kind of surface and it's moving around, and there's some kind of friction or stickiness at the boundary. And by increasing this twist, C0, it kind of positivizes the problem, makes the metric in the interior more positive. And it also increases, in terms of your boundary condition, you can interpret it as increases the stickiness of at the boundary. And this allows you to get your estimates based on the size of this C0. Now, at the very end, when you end up with, so you've twisted the boundary condition up and you've done your mean curvature flow and you have a holomorphic disk, well, then you can just untwist to get back to a holomorphic disk attached to your original Lagrangian boundary condition. It's very explicit and hands-on. So we twist up the boundary condition, we do our flow, and then we untwist it by exactly the amount. But how much you twist it up depends upon the one you start with, and you positivize it enough, eventually your boundary, it becomes a, both a good boundary condition and the whole problem ends up...
So you can rewrite the flow, in fact.
Well, this is the boundary condition. I guess you could. You could rewrite it,
but,
the,
no, I mean,
but it will not be...
Yeah. It would not be the easier way to do it.
You could, yes. Yes, you could write this. But we, again, this is kind of artificial in some way. It's just a way to get the estimates to get long-time existence from our flow, really, is what the idea. And so the optimal kind of thing you could get is a positive disk. That's the kind of the optimal you could get with this.
You're actually changing the mean curvature flow.
No, it's the boundary condition. It's just the boundary condition that we're twisting up.
You're
twisting up the boundary condition. So if you want...
I see. But, I mean, that's still... You're doing mean curvature flow with a very twisted...
Boundary, yes.
Boundary.
And if you wanted to untwist it as you go, you would just subtract that shift. But it actually, it wouldn't be mean curvature flow quite because, of course, it wouldn't be positive anymore, right? We're doing this to positivize, so you can attach positive disks to it to initially start this whole thing. But... Again, when you try and control, so what you try and do is you use the angle condition to ensure that you never slip off the edge of this disk and lose positivity. That's one of the aspects. So you have to get certain estimates, and these estimates will depend upon the relative size of your twisting and the slopes, if you like, of the underlying one you're starting off with, your boundary condition, whatever it happens to be. And you twist it up enough, and eventually it becomes a good enough boundary condition, and you write down your estimates, and you get long-time existence, and then you get your holomorphic disk, and then you subtract off, and again, because it's holomorphic, you don't change the fact that it's a holomorphic disk, and you come back exactly to what you want. Okay, so it's a technical thing, really, for this hemisphere, but certainly you need enough space and control of your flow to keep it in that space in order to get long-time existence. That's for mean curvature flow.
So, just at the end of the process, when
yes.
you have a holomorphic disk,
yes.
Lagrangian?
Right, well, it'll be attached to a twisted Lagrangian one, to a twisted, yep.
But you said that at the end you undo the twist.
Yes, so you got a Lagrangian.
So
it won't be a positive disk, yes.
Is it zero or is it negative?
Well, it'll be negative. It'll satisfy this condition. Its total area will be zero, so it'll have positive points. Well, less than zero, so it'll have...
Okay.
So that, yes, you said...
Is holomorphic has nothing to do with being definite?
Okay, it's not. Well, okay, so being holomorphic... Being holomorphic is this being zero.
Oh.
Being Lagrangian, this is zero. Being definite is just that is greater than zero. So it's more twisting than aholomorphic. So if you are holomorphic, yes, it's close to being definite, but not necessarily, right? Yeah, not necessarily. Okay.
So,
yeah.
But I still go back to my question.
Uh-huh.
You could have...
Without this twisting...
You do the
yes.
whole thing in the original for untwisted
yes.
Yes.
system.
And,
but it wouldn't be a...
You would just get something messy.
Yes,
I mean,
it would be another flow.
Yeah,
it would be another flow, yes. But again, the idea is that it shows you that, you know, twisting things up is good because it elliptizes what is a hyperbolic problem. So you could interpret the Carathéodory conjecture as a kind of a singularity theorem for a Lorentz surface, for a two-dimensional Lorentz manifold. I mean, you can interpret it that way. And what you do here is you twist it up and you throw away the foliation and you just get this positive disk, and then you can attach another one and you can then find a holomorphic disk, and that, you know, so you're elliptizing the boundary condition and the whole problem. And in particular, by twisting up the boundary in this way, this is part of that process. So in these neutral metrics, you can convert hyperbolic problems to elliptic problems. I mean, that's the overall kind of idea. That's the idea. You deform a hyperbolic problem to an elliptic problem, and if you've got enough control, perhaps you can solve it. That's essentially... Yeah, well, as I say, by twisting up, it's contactifying. What it does in R3 is it takes the oriented normal lines and it twists them, so it makes them start twisting, so there's no integrable surface.
No, so it's a gauge, it's more like a gauge transformation.
No, it's you're actually taking your surface and deforming it by twisting the normals, and so there's no surface anymore in R3, so it's more than a gauge. It's you're changing, you're deforming the surface in
I mean, but somehow it's
Mm-hmm.
You have a surface and you make some sort of coordinate change.
Mm-hmm.
It looks very much like a gauge.
Well,
I mean,
perhaps.
Well, it might be easier to understand.
Mm-hmm. Okay, so let me that was by way of addenda to the last talk. So let me now go on to the fourth part, where I want to return, in fact, to the local aspect. Global to local. So let me, before I do that, let me just again emphasize, what is it at a global level? So we've gone historically the opposite way in addressing